Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning and good afternoon and good evening to all of you in the virtual neighborhood of Life is a Sacred Journey. I am your host, Michelle Pope, and it is always my honor and privilege to come and be with you. I have to put a shout out to Dr. Pearl because the show or the broadcast, however you participate with the Life is a Sacred Journey family, has gone viral. Viral, meaning like 100,000 and 30,000 on TikTok. And so I just want to thank Dr. Pearl again for coming to Life is a Sacred Journey to share his wisdom around this whole COVID thing and Black Lives Matter. And today I have somebody who I met early on in my career here at Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay, believe it or not. And I started my 24th year here in January. And I met Dr. Lenore, I think it was like my fourth or fifth month here at ASEB. And he called Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay and wanted someone to come and talk about Alzheimer's and what we did here. And Karen Grimson sent me. And we met, and it was a face-to-face, and it was an incredible interaction, and I will always remember it because it was one of the first things that I did as a program director here at Alzheimer's Services. And I've been hounding Dr. Lenore to get him to come to Life is a Sacred Journey because of the incredible work that he does. So let me first tell you a little bit and hit the subscribe button, share, because we're going to have a great conversation this morning. But I want to tell you, I mean, I could, his bio is like, I printed it, it's massive. So I'm just going to try to give you the little highlights. And then you can go to his website and really take a look at it. And so Dr. Michael Lenore, first of all, is a fellow of both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. As you all know, I've had asthma since a child, and so this is something that's near and dear to my heart, and I have followed Dr. Lenore's writings and everything around asthma, and particularly as it relates to urban communities and African Americans. He is a lifelong member of the American College of Allergy and served on the board of the American Association of Certified Allergists. From 1998 to 2000, Dr. Lenore served as the chair of the National Medical Association of Allergy and Asthma Section. He also has a full-time practice in San Francisco and Oakland since 1977. He has served as the chairperson of the underserved community of the Academy, American Academy of Allergy, and the past president of the Northern California Allergy Association. Again, I could go on. 20 years as director of allergy services at San Francisco General Hospital. He also has a special interest in asthma, as I said before, in the African American community and high risk. He also, this is where I first met Dr. Lenore, is I was a subscriber to Black Enterprise Magazine, and they highlighted him as the Oakland Citizen of the Year and as physician in the Oakland Tribune and all that. So I've been stalking him for a long time. So Dr. Michael Lenore, welcome, welcome, welcome. And first of all, let me tell you, presently, he is the president of the Ethnic Health Institute at Alta Bates Medical Center and the chair of the board of the African American Wellness Project and the associate clinical professor of pediatrics at the University of California. And Dr. Lenore, before we get into our conversation, I want you to know that Stacy Current, who is a dear friend of mine, district superintendent of the California-Nevada Conference, she and I served this conference together, and her son Leo, yes. She said to tell you, hey, and to say that Leo is in his 20s now and doing very, very, very well. So it's just really exciting see how the circle is so wide?
It's small, you know, in our community.
Yes.
One away.
One away. So yeah. Let's talk about the work that the that you were doing at the Ethnic Health Institute, and particularly, you know, as it relates to this time that we're living in with COVID, and you know, when we think about asthma and what we were hearing as the COVID diagnoses was coming out, that people with asthma, people with high blood pressure, people with diabetes, they were describing the African American population with those secondary diagnoses. So can you kind of talk about that from your perspective as a physician in the community and enlighten us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not no longer with the Ethnic Health Institute.
Oh, okay.
We'll continue their good work, but I'm the chairman and president of the African American Wellness Project.
Okay.
And that's a project that started in about 2002 because Flo Stroud, who I know you must remember, who was the director of health of both City of San Francisco, City of Berkeley. We were both pretty tired of the way African Americans were treated in the healthcare system.
Mm.
And so our objective was to put together an organization which assisted African Americans in dealing with the healthcare system. Some of these, the so-called health disparities. Health disparities are interesting in the sense that they don't have to do with what you have because of who you are, who your clan is. They have to do with how the healthcare system treats you once you get into that system. Because that's just as important as health outcomes as is health disparity. And so we put together a project that started from beginning to end in terms of talking about early detection, disease prevention, talking about how to set up your healthcare system. And then talking about how to respond to a system that does not respond to you.
Mm.
I always say that if African Americans got as mad about healthcare, which is poor in quality and unequal, as they do when somebody cuts in front of you in the Safeway line, we wouldn't have this problem. But everybody on this call, everybody on this podcast, has had an experience as a black person in the healthcare system where they felt unappreciated, disrespected, and poorly treated. And so we have focused on that throughout most of our career. At the present time, we have our organization is our executive director, Monique Pittman. We have all put together a number of projects that have to do with, primarily with outreach. So we have basically several components. The one component was BlackDoctor.org, which is a Facebook live program. You know, they have 3 million Facebook fans, so we're able to reach people there. We also have a podcast called Black Doctors Speak. We have a number of media projects. One is the Second Opinion program, which we started here in the Bay Area, where people can call and get second opinion. We feature Dr. Glenda Newman, who has written a book called Focus on Your Better Health, which talks about how you set up your healthcare system. And we have a number of other more robust kinds of ways to reach the community. At the present time, we really have the potential probably to reach 100,000 African Americans.
Wow.
Through all of the various partnerships that we have.
Wow.
Primarily with obviously Zoom, StreamYard, and the other ways to do it. But I'm convinced that communication has changed, and I'm sure you have, feel the same way. And so to be able to reach that number of people with a message is important. We have been, as you know, on KBLX for almost 25 years,
mm-hmm.
the 32nd and 62nd up to the date, trusted, vetted, timely information to approximately 220,000
wow.
African Americans. So
wow.
we've been doing this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so my background is both in allergy and asthma, but I was also the medical editor for CBS Radio for 15 years. Pacifica Radio for 15. So we had a lot of communication experience. But fortunately, the people with the new communication, people like you African Americans, can get good information.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of the work that you've done through the years, because Alzheimer's is not an easy thing to approach.
Well, I really thank you for that. And I think as a community, we are all trying to come together and educate not, you know, our brown and black siblings, but also everybody on this, because to change the system, what you just said really resonates with me. But in order to change the system, it takes a collective process to do that, and it starts with how we educate our medical professionals. And so, you know, Dr. Lenore, there's a oath that doctors take. I've been at many commencements and been the keynote for nurses and doctors and PT and OT. Anyone that goes into serving people in the medical arena, there is an oath or a covenant that they make about caring for those individuals. But what about the system that prevents that from happening?
Well, I think it's a system that's linked with unconscious bias toward African Americans and other brown people, brown black people. It's a system that really requires that you take charge of your own health. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have been many times through various Healthy People 2000, Healthy People 2010, 2015, 2020, and that was an attempt for the system to help you from the top down. I believe that for African Americans to be successful in getting the health care that they need to start from the bottom up. They need to start their own system. They need to understand the diseases that are possible. They need to get proper screening. And we also need to be able to select our health care resources, our doctors, our specialists. We need to ask questions. We need to demand service. So there's so many elements in getting good health care that are ignored. We just think once you sign up for Sutter, Kaiser, Medicare, whatever it is, that the system itself takes care of us. But the big problem, I think, in the system is an unconscious bias that many, many, not only doctors, but nurses and medical assistants and front desk people, the bias they have towards African Americans that they don't really even understand. They somehow see us differently. We don't need to, you know, we don't need to know the doctor's going to be late. We don't need to know what the drugs do. We don't need to know who's giving us a second, what specialist you're sending us to. We don't need to know those things because we're black. Mm. It's almost like a plantation. There's no, often there's no deliberate attempt to do that, but that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so our organization, the African American Wellness Project, at the core, is that you have to take care of your own health care system and that of your family. Because if you don't, the system is not going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, it will impact your outcomes.
Well, you know, that we had a guest, and she started a company from Canada, and it's called Vault. And it's about exactly that, you know, and keeping good records, having, you know, it's simple as getting a notebook if that's all that you want to do. But there are software systems where you can log all of your stuff so that you can see. I think Dr. Lenore is hitting it right on, you know, what do they say, the nail on the head or whatever. But you've got to know who you are and how you function and what makes you tick inside, or you're really just a spectator in your care, and you're going in and asking somebody, you know, to tell you what you should already know. I always say we take better care of our cars. We're more inquisitive about our automobiles because a mechanic is going to give us a bill, but we are not as inquisitive about our health care, but we don't realize there's still a bill for that. The bill could possibly be your death because you're not engaged.
Yeah, well, I agree. You know, we were hot for a while in the summer with George Flood and everybody talking about equity and the law, equity and equity and health. My belief now is if you go into a crowd of people who are really not African American and ask who George Flood is, they won't remember. And things are about to bounce back. But nowhere in the system is there a worse discrepancy in terms of health equity than in the healthcare system itself. Mm-hmm. That's why African Americans from the cradle to the grave are more likely to die from any kind of chronic disease. And if you take, it's been consistently shown for most diseases. In fact, there's an argument about whether race should be even included in research. Uh-huh. But it's consistent that if you take two people with the same disease and you treat them exactly the same, with one black, one white, the outcomes would be the same. So why do black men die twice as often as prostate cancer? Why do women with breast cancer die more often? It's because of something that happens in the system. Now, I'm not completely. In fact, it's funny. I'm going to get a test today. I should have gotten 3 months ago.
Okay.
I don't want to get no bad news during Christmas. It's just a routine screening test. But now I didn't want no bad news. Then the Super Bowl came up. I was working my birthday. I was working my day.
Yes.
But I said, Michael, you got to consult it now. But we go into the system so late. The December symptom, we're likely to go into the system to start to take care of it later than other people. So when we get into the system, we already are behind. Mm. And so consequently, that's why even during this COVID epidemic, that we must continue to do our routine screens, blood pressure screens, our prostate cancer, the breast examinations, and things like that. So, and we've got to get our children into the office and get them seen, vaccinated, so that consequently it's the system. You know, you sign up for something and say, well, this is going to be really good. Yeah. Then you go in there and the medical system has a casual attitude, the doctor, doesn't want to answer your questions. They send you for a second opinion. You better get a second opinion or that second opinion, a specialist. I mean, they send you the specialist. Well, that could be their brother-in-law or cousin or somebody, and you need to check out the requirements. But there's so much that we need to do, and our African American Wellness Project is committed to raising the level of health literacy in our country and using the techniques that are now available through social media and traditional media.
And then, Dr. Lenore, how does the African American Health group that you're leading see the intergenerational communication? Like, how are we, bringing up the next generation? I mean, for the first time in the history of our culture since our emancipation, we have more vegetarians and we're engaging in holistic practices along. But are we seeing a shift with our younger generations as they look at their health? Are we seeing lower numbers in traditional diseases like high blood pressure, diabetes, or are we remaining consistent in those areas?
I think we're seeing some improvement in the whole process. I think younger people are certainly far more focused on what keeps us healthy than I was when I was that same age. But, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, or 4 years certainly, have given them an intellectual slap in the face. They now understand what we've been trying to tell them about discrimination and about prejudice and about racism for a long time, because they were not a willing audience. I mean, they grew up in integrated communities with people that they knew were friends of theirs on a football team, a cheerleading debate time team, and went off to college. And that's where they start to sense a little racism. But these last few years have given us a slap in the face, a sense of what racism really looks like. It puts pressure on you from a health perspective. And in addition, it makes you... unless you woke, you know, as I use the term woke.
Yeah.
They're learning now that if you want to take care of anything, you know, your health, your education, your children, you have to start with yourself.
Yeah.
But I do think, to go back to answer your original question,
mm-hmm.
that they are a little bit more conscious of what it takes to stay healthy. Now, we still see tremendous incidence of diabetes because of obesity.
Yeah.
So we're still far too obese. And so that's one of the things that the African American Wellness Project has focused on. Because, you know, eating habits start early. I always say you can't drive a little child to McDonald's. You got to get there some kind of way. For the children. And then all of a sudden you look up and you want them to be healthy.
Yes.
So the good thing is they are more conscious of a lot of things. And certainly they have, if they don't see what racism looks like now, I mean, then you need to go back to 1870 to see some of these things.
Well, you know, the other side of that is in many of our communities, we have food deserts. I did a previous podcast a couple of years ago about communities where there are no Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or even community gardens. None of this is happening in those communities, but yet you will see a whole strip of fast food places for those individuals, and they also price it so that it's affordable. Whereas if you know you go into a Whole Foods and buy an organic carrot, it costs a lot of money. So what's that all about?
Well, here's the issue. I do think that one of the problems has been that some of these communities are not safe. And so consequently, they are, it's hard for African Americans in those communities to get the resources. I always say in some places, if you're running, if you're jogging, you're running from something. Yeah. You know, and so consequently, if you have around your community a lot of violence, a lot of public issue, health issues,
yeah.
It's difficult to get a large corporation to establish a facility in those communities. But I think they're changing because of gentrification. You know, my father was a YMCA executive, and he ended up, we were living in Cincinnati, Dallas, St. Louis, and then New York City. And he was the executive director of the Harlem YMCA.
Oh, okay.
He lived on 119th and Lenox.
Okay.
You know, and he used to walk around there, you know, and there was a lot of brothers who were near the Lenox Lounge.
Yeah.
So we could go over and see little Miles Davis and
yeah.
walk around town, you know, a whole variety of the greats, John Coates, all of them in that neighborhood, but it was all black. So I was in Harlem about a year ago, and, you know, 125th Street, you know, it goes up 126, 127.
Yeah.
But it starts to get pretty testy. But there were people, all kinds of people, walking their dogs, moving around, and all of a sudden, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Mm-hmm.
The resources showed up.
Mm-hmm.
The grocery store showed up. The Best Buy showed up. All of these corporations started showing up in Harlem
mm-hmm.
because now these neighborhoods, which were once all black neighborhoods, are now gentrified.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, we're starting to see that. I'm sure you've seen that in West Oakland.
Oh, yeah.
And East Oakland and other places.
Yeah.
And so as other ethnic groups show up, mainly Caucasians show up, then these resources show up. But there's still large communities across our country
yes.
where that doesn't happen. But now, because of programs like this and their ability to go online, and I'm not going to learn to dance on TikTok, but we can get a message there.
Right, you can do messaging. Yes, you can.
You know, I changed the lyrics a little bit, but we need to take them where we find them. But we don't like them. We don't want to leave them like it is.
That's right.
You know what I mean? You know,
yes, I know. That's right.
Because now you can go in the homes. You can talk to people directly. They don't have to get on the bus because of telehealth and other new things.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to take advantage of those things. And that's what the African American Wellness Project will do. And our site is aawellnessproject.org. Our podcast is Black Doctors Speak.
So,
but that's what we need to be doing.
How do people help with what you're doing with the project? So are you taking donations? Are there opportunities for faith-based communities to partner with you or other stakeholders in the community? Because I do think one of the things that needs to happen is we need to create a movement. I am now old enough to understand that We created movements for things in my life. I watched at the knee of my father and my mother march for things and create change. But they got tired. I know they got tired because they were raising us and fighting the wars against everything that was keeping them from having what they wanted and who they were in back east where I grew up. But this is, we need a movement now, though, to bring us all together to make a change, because it's not happening piece by piecemeal.
Well, one of our projects is to bring together the leaders in the African-American community, in our community, at least so they can decide whether they set up something so they can talk. When I first moved to this community, we had something called the Health Consortium.
Oh, I remember that.
And we used to meet at least once a month. People would talk about issues that they were facing in the healthcare system as employees or as supervisors or as the people who ran hospitals who were black. And the nurses and the doctors, and we'd all get together and talk. We talk about what jobs are available. We don't even know now what jobs are available. What we find out in the paper is that the director of health for the African-American in this part of Oakland has been selected, and we didn't even know the process was out there.
Oh.
And so consequently, we hope to bring together leaders, and I hope you will join us.
I would love to join you. Yeah.
Set up a consortium. So that's one of the kinds of things we do. We're mesh. We want to be underneath of your process. Here's what we find, and here's what I'm sure you see. There's some tremendous resources in the African-American community, and there's a tremendous need on this side of the situation where African-Americans need services, but the two don't meet all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
So consequently, a church will set up a health fair that and they'll do all the things, and they'll get everybody together, and 8 or 10 people will show up because nobody knows about them.
Right.
But we've always seen ourselves as the connection between people who have problems and resources within our community that take care of those problems. So that's one of the things we do with our traditional KBLX projects. We're now doing them with all of the other issues that we have. We have a very vigorous, we have a newsletter that we publish. We have a health tip of the day that we put on Facebook. We're on TikTok. I'm not there, but my staff.
Your staff.
And my granddaughters. every single day, I got to watch a new TikTok dance.
I know.
And then we have a youth project looking at vaping, looking at overdoses, looking at racism, and looking at mental health. So consequently, we see ourselves as that connection. We have put in place the kinds of communications relationships that allow us probably to reach as many as 100,000 people on every issue through our relationship with the Cobb Institute and BlackDoctors.org. So we thank them for being our partners. But I got all these phones in my mind. This is how we do it.
That's because you're surrounded by music when you do your, but you know, definitely I want to be engaged and involved and bring Alzheimer's services to the East Bay, to the table, because I think that's important. Yesterday morning I had to get up at 3 a.m. because I participated in the rollout from the World Health Organization on the ageism campaign that they're taking on, and that was so exciting to be a part of that, to see that we are really finally talking about ageism and also how that affects healthcare and the disparity also in brown and black and ethnic communities, and life expectancy. So Dr. Lenora, as you are doing your work in the community, what things would you tell our listening audience they could do to help to move the needle in this whole wellness and preventative care and all of that?
Well, I would say take charge of your pod. I mean, your grandmother, your father, your grandparents, your aunts and uncles, and educate them about early screening studies. First of all, going to the doctor on a regular basis. We have a terrible problem with black men going to the doctor.
I know.
You know what I mean? I'm including myself, because whenever the elderly box comes up, I have to check that now. I mean, so I should be taking better care, but I think we really have to educate our family about preventative, about the whole issue of prevention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why you saw when the shots became available and you went to get a shot and looked around, you saw you were the only black person in the line, but there were thousands of white people there, because that's how they do it. I mean, I think we need to do more of that. We need to know, for instance, let's start with our children. We need to know from the time that, well, let's start with pregnancies.
Yes.
What a healthy pregnancy looks like. African-American women still have the highest mortality rates for dying during pregnancy or during delivery. So we need to start there with what makes a healthy pregnancy. Then we need to know what keeps a healthy baby. We need to make our visits to the doctor pretty much on time, if between the, right after the hospital, 4-6 months, that kind of thing, and get the immunizations that they need. Here in California, it's the law that you have to get immunized, so we don't have that controversy, but across the country, African Americans are less likely to be immunized for childhood diseases. Mm. And whenever we have these big outbreaks of pertussis or mumps or measles, you know, they're always in African American and underserved communities. Then we need to be healthy as adults. We need to look at exercise and diet. And then we need, as we go older, there are certain things we need to do. We need to go for regular visits every couple of years. If you're younger, once a year. If you're older, to get our screenings, our prostate screens, our mammograms, looking at our growth issues, looking at our colonoscopies, all of these things need to be done. And we're not as aggressive about that as we should be, because clearly things that are so much technology now, the things that are picked up early can really be dealt with pretty effectively. Mm-hmm. Things that you've never thought of, cancer situations, breast cancer picked up early can be easily treated. Prostate cancer picked up early can be treated. Mm-hmm. And so consequently, these are the things that we really need to be focusing on. And the other issue is that we need to take care of our mental health. That's one of the biggest problems. And we need to understand what we call the slave health deficit, the role that racism plays in keeping you unhealthy. And too often that's, like I say, that's slap in the face. And we had the last 4 years with the Trump administration and the overt racism we're seeing now from the Congress, you know, that this is waking up young people. Mm-hmm. They're starting to understand, hey, this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. But we, those of us who are older, we've been dealing with this for many years. Maybe I happen to be in a segregated city for much of my high school career.
Mm-hmm.
We learned to kind of deal with it bits at a time. Still affects us.
Yeah,
all of a sudden they're faced with it. They see it. See it with the police. They see it in jobs. They see it on TV. They see it all the time. It's comfortable now to be racist, but that puts a stress on you that you don't appreciate, and that's one of the reasons our statistics are as bad as they are.
Yeah, I have to say I really, that resonates with me, because I said yesterday to one of my colleagues, I really feel like we're all experiencing a little PTSD during all of this, but also because I've lived through segregation and lived, I'm tired. You know, there's a part of my soul that is like, come on, people, let's get over this racism thing, this ageism thing, all the isms, and let's just fix this problem. We've got people living on the streets right now and people who are dying on the streets, and you want to just waste time. And so there comes a point where you just get...
You want to just lay your burden down.
Yes. 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 And it affects the way that you see your colleagues. You know, I have to say, when this COVID vaccine conversation started happening and I had this conversation with others, there were many of my colleagues who didn't believe when I said to them, you haven't done enough work to convince the African-American and brown and black people to take that vaccine, because you don't know the stories of medical apartheid against my people. And they didn't.
No. No, but here's what's strange to me as a black doctor. All right, when I heard about the COVID virus, I saw the dynamics. You know, I remember where I was when I saw the first TV report of the AIDS epidemic back in the 70s.
Yes.
I'm an immunologist, so that I knew that was going to be a problem. And when I first heard about the COVID thing, I knew that was going to be a problem. All right, so all of a sudden, we've got this infection. It's disproportionately killing black people. Why? Because when you see the reports on first responders, we only see the doctors and the nurses, and they should be congratulated because they're good in respiratory therapists. That's where the humans were. But the first responders were not those. Mm-hmm. They were the early bus responders, the people that drove those buses, that worked in stores, that took care of people in nursing homes. They didn't know anything about this virus.
Yep.
Nobody told them it was around. They didn't know what the process was. I remember seeing a black bus driver who was saying, well, look, I'm driving this bus, and there's this, and he died of COVID, ultimately. And so consequently, I think that if you look at the statistics now, 62 million Americans have received at least one vaccine. 32 million Americans are completely vaccinated. If you look at the percentages, 53% are Caucasian, 8% African American. And so consequently, that's a number right there. Except we're three times more likely to be hospitalized and almost two times more likely to die.
Right.
And consequently, it's the early bus responders that I go back to. And so I knew what was going to happen in the black community. I was surprised. Always CNN say, oh, it's terrible in the black community. We knew it was going to happen. And so, because when America calls African Americans get pneumonia. And so consequently, we knew that was going to happen. And so why wasn't there a concerted effort to deal with these communities and deal with these issues in nursing homes and other places? Well, it's the same racism that started 400 years ago.
Yeah.
They don't see us the same way. I hate to break it to you if you don't know this, but they do not see black people the same way. And so consequently, maybe if we were stronger, but then here comes the vaccination issue. Knowing that we're a high-risk community, I saw some concern about hesitancy. But I didn't see a special program to target the black community, to talk to them with vetted sources. I think when I talk to black people, I've been around a long time, maybe too long, but hey, I'm still here. And in any event, when you talk to them about not so much about the vaccine itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because obviously there are some questions that can be answered. But what is life going to look like for you if you don't get vaccinated?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that you have to think about.
Yeah.
Young people, we have a program, and I'm glad that we should certainly collaborate on this program. We have a program to talk to older people in two ways. We want younger people, even though you don't get vaccinated, to talk to your grandparents and your parents and your relatives about their risk of not getting a vaccine. Not yours. You do what you want to do, but you talk to them about what their risks are. And let me tell you, most of the older people I know, you talk to your young people about this vaccine. You know, talk to them the same way you talk to them when they didn't know what you told them when they were little. You know, or spank them. But most of the older black African Americans, they went away a little bit, of course.
Yeah.
But they're getting vaccinated.
Yeah,
in pretty large numbers. But we need to talk to these young people. Hey, look, what is life going to look like for you if you don't get vaccinated?
Right.
You won't be able to go to certain games. You might not be able to get on the plane. You ain't going to get in no other country. I mean, that's out of the question.
Yeah.
And it's going to shut down Hawaii and Mexico for you eventually if you're not vaccinated. And so that's one thing. You won't be able to go to family gatherings without risking that other relative who didn't have COVID. Or even if you go to family gatherings, there is some question as to whether vaccinated people can carry the virus. And so, look, this is 1870 all over again, people.
Yeah.
400 years of neglect. And they're putting us in a trick bag. They don't really, in Tuskegee, we didn't get treatment.
Right.
That was the problem.
Right.
We were treated. We were infected, but not treated. Now, here, we have a treatment, but we're not getting it because Tuskegee, when they didn't get a treatment.
Exactly.
It's kind of a paradox, but I think that I'm going to get my group of older people to start talking to younger people.
Yeah.
Because people seem to be a bit more concerned.
And I love that because I did a podcast a while back. I am now vaccinated, and it was my son and daughter who really got into me and kept saying, Mom, and of course, because I work in a healthcare environment, that was going to happen. But they were the ones that did the research and said, we think it's important. We love you, and because I have asthma, they were concerned about that, and they did their homework. And you're right. Now I'm going back to them and saying, okay, you guys, your time is getting ready to come up, your age group, what you going to do? And so that we can get together for Christmas and the things that we, you know, just even get together for Juneteenth or whatever it is that we normally gather, we want to be able to do that. And so before I let you go, though, Dr. Lenore, this all has to do with brown and black people also participating in research. And I know that's a sticky wicket for us because, you know, again, the medical apartheid that was inflicted upon brown and black and Native Americans, boom, we know this. But should, I'm not, and again, I don't like to tell people what to do, but at the end of the day, unless we participate, how are people ever going to learn about who we are and how to participate? You know, am I making sense? I'm trying to word this so that I don't offend you guys out there because, you know, I know you guys, you're so thin-skinned sometimes, but, you know.
At the African American Wellness Project, we are encouraging African Americans to get into the clinical trials.
Okay.
There have been big pushes to get into clinical trials, and I served for 10 years at before I was president of the National Medical Association as the chairman of their Project Impact, which had to do with encouraging African-American researchers into getting clinical trials.
Yeah.
Well, here's the issue. If we don't get in clinical trials, the whole issue of whether race is even important in clinical trials has now become a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem, but a discussion intellectually. Because we did some studies here that showed that if you take 300 self-described African Americans and you do the genetics, which we did do with UCSF, you're going to find it's all over the place. We're either Indian, Caucasian, or African. And you can't look at an African American and tell what percentage is what. I mean, we have some, certainly not based on skin color. White people were pretty good at screening that out and telling who was black. But if you look at the genetic code, a self-described African American may be very dark. They have 50% Caucasian, 30% African, or a self-described African American very light, maybe 40, 70% African.
Yeah, yeah.
So what the researchers are saying, well, if that's the case, and you're looking at the impact of a drug on a particular ethnic population, how do you know which part is responding to what or not responding? And so they want to take race. Some people feel race is just another discriminatory category in research.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can tell you, there was a time when most of the research on medications were done in South America because that's what's easy to do. But now most of the studies here are very well controlled. People, it's not if you say you have a cancer research project, you don't get no drug or the cancer drug. You get a different form of treatment, or you continue your own treatment. And I think you bring up a very good point. I mean, it's unusual for black people to talk about getting into research because of the issues that you talked about in the past or issues they've heard about.
Mm-hmm.
But unless we get in, I think the first person in the vaccine clinical trial was an African-American nurse.
Yes.
Because she understood the value of having this vaccination looked at and if it were effective, put back into the community. And so I think that's something that you can assist us with because we really have a project that looks at an African Americans engaging in clinical trials and understanding what they are.
Yeah.
But I think that unless we do, we really don't know until after the drug is released whether that's good for us.
Yeah.
So consequently, I think you're absolutely correct.
And I'm so thankful that I remembered to ask you that because I sit on an advisory board at UCSF for research to be done for Alzheimer's. And it was so difficult just to even, and it was around, again, African Americans getting the, being diagnosed with Alzheimer's more than blah, blah, blah. And we were trying to get a group of people together, and it was like pulling the teeth that I don't have in the back of my mouth to get people just to talk about it, not to be stuck or anything, just to talk. And so, yeah, I just...
we should get together because we wrote an article with a number of authors in the New England Journal, which appeared in January's issue of the New England Journal called Race and Research.
Oh.
And you might want to take a look at that article because it was a rebuttal to this issue of why race doesn't count. And I looked at a number of studies and done a number of studies with Dr. Esteban Richard at UCSF on asthma in African Americans,
mm-hmm.
and clearly there's some differences in responses to medication in
mm-hmm.
self-described African Americans. So this is a big issue for us because every study is supposed to have at least 12% African American to be.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Okay.
But
very seldom do they reach that particular goal. The companies are very sensitive to that.
Well, we have had Dr. Lenora. I am so thankful that we have reconnected. Thank you for being so gracious to come this morning. I know that your hands and heart are in so many things in the community, that you continually lift up all of the issues that plague our brown and black community, as well as other communities, because we learn from each other. Well, give everybody the contact information for your group project.
The African American Wellness Project, and our website is aawellnessproject.org. That's aawellnessproject.org. Our podcast is Black Doctors Speak. Black Doctors Speak. And every week we're on Facebook Live on blackdoctor.org. And our program is called the African American Wellness Watch. And so, but I want to say this to you, and thank you so much for inviting me, because you are one of the people who has made us so proud. The Oakland community has so many great resources and has such a great attitude in our community and ethic for doing the work that that needs to be done. The problem is the interconnection and the communication, the coordination and the integration of our resources, because we don't have a place to talk. We're facing 400 years of a slave health deficit. To overcome that, it's going to take us working from the bottom up. And as you saw the UC thing,
yeah.
I mean, you go convince people that the sun, and then you ask them about research. You know what I mean? So from the bottom up, we believe at the African American Wellness Project, aawellnessproject.org, that things work from the bottom up. You need to take control of your own system. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a special program with Dr. Glenda Newell and Dr. Brenda Scripps,
who
wrote a book called Focus on Your Health,
Focus on Your Health. Great book
on how you can create your own healthcare system. And I certainly hope people will join us. And I will send you some information.
So, and we'll put the link on Michelle Pope Productions, so you can go there, or we'll put it on Life is a Sacred Journey. We'll get it out there, because that will be a great opportunity for all of you in our virtual community to get more information to share within your communities. That's what this is all about, and I'm going to close. But everything you learn on Life is a Sacred Journey is for you to eat the meat, throw away the bones, but keep enough so that when you're having that sidebar conversation with somebody that you love, like, or just know, that you can have an aha moment and share. Because that's the problem. We are so busy gossiping and sharing stuff that doesn't matter, that doesn't help anybody, that we forget that there's good stuff that we need to be sharing. And if I hear it from Dr. Lenore, then I can trust it.
Well, look, it's funny that when I first post a Facebook picture with me and my grandchildren, you know, I get 500 hits. But when I post a health-related message, I get 14, 15, 18. So consequently, we're trying to figure that all out. But I do want people to remember that health is your biggest asset.
Well, this is the thing. We take care of our cars, we take care of our houses, but the reality is your number one asset is your mind and your physical being, because you couldn't have those things if you didn't take care of this asset. So don't get it twisted, people, because your car and your house, you can't take that with you.
No.
And if you're sick, you can't even drive your car and you can't enjoy your house. So, you know, let's get it right. Let's get it right. Anyway, this has been Life is a Sacred Journey. I am your host, Michelle Pope. It is my honor to be among you. Dr. Lenore, thank you, thank you, thank you for being a mentor from a distance. Thank you for everything that you have done in your career, in your lifetime, to give back to the community, to honor our legacy as proud black people, that we really are creators and innovators, and sometimes we forget who we are. So thank you so much.
People remember, whenever somebody says, where are you from? I'm from Oakland, and I say that proudly, because we are a special group of people, and I'm proud.
Well, thank you so much. All of you out in the virtual neighborhood, have a good weekend. We'll continue to wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't just use hand sanitizer, people. Wash your hands with some soap and water. Do the thing. Sing a song. Dr. Lenora gave you some hints. Sing a song. Then use the hand sanitizer when you pump the gas and all of those other things. But it's not enough. You got to wash your hands, okay? Hug yourself. Love yourself. And then you can be a change that you want to see in the world. If you don't love yourself, you only take that out into the world. So it starts with you. Peace. Stay online, Dr. Lenore. I'm just going to send them away. Have a good weekend, everybody. God bless. All right.
Well, that was really a good interview.
That was great.
Thing, you know, we, like I said, we have blackdoctors.org has 2 to 3 million Facebook fans. And so consequently, when we do those programs, then, you know, we get 6,000 to 8,000 people. Well, sometimes we get 40, 50, you know, like that. But we're redoing that program. So I know that you're busy, but I'd like to have you come on and with some of your special guests. People
I'd love that.
Very interesting in health.
Yeah.
Because we're looking for co-hosts.
Okay.
So, but, and like I said, I know you're busy.
But this is my work, Dr. Lenore. This is what I do, you know. And as I said to my bishop, you know, when Stacy and I were in a meeting, and I said to the bishop, this is my calling to combine my faith, my hope in the world, with this work. I mean, why would I stay at a nonprofit and not make any money?
We got this grant from the Congregational Church, Congregational Church.
Oh, yes. Oh, you did get it. Yay. The Pilgrimage Foundation.
Well, we didn't really get it. It's not a big grant, but it is a grant to educate older African Americans about the healthcare system.
Perfect.
We have Andy Santamaria?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're going to do some stuff with him because he's a pretty... as far as I know, you know much better. I think he has an older audience.
He does.
Lady Wiley.
He does.
So, and I worked with him in the past. He's a good man. And then we need to put in some other elements in our project. So I need to talk to you.
Yeah, let's stay in touch and let's talk soon.
Do I have your phone number?
Yeah, let me give it to you. It's 510-367. 9802. So that's my cell. You can text or call.
510.
Yep. 367.
Okay.
9802.
All right. And spell your.
It's M I C H E A L, and the last name is Pope. P O P E.
You know, I didn't see Mike. Let me tell you where the confusion came.
Mm.
I have. This is where it's so confusing. I have a public relations guy in Chicago named Michael Pope.
Oh my God!
So when I got this message, I thought I was doing this for him. That's why I was confused about what to say to you. I thought this was coming from Chicago.
Okay.
Here's my national public relations.
Okay, got you. No, you did it.
I was confused. And I thought this was part of his own thing. And, you know, I'm like you. I show up at the last minute, so I haven't got
everything. Yeah, yeah, no, I did. Yeah, you know, I just, I let Felicia do it, and I just, you know, do my own. No, she's good. She's good. You know, she's, it's so interesting, Dr. Lenore, she's from Moldova, and she came here and interned with me for a year as a medical fellow. And went back to Moldova. Now she lives in Canada, and she changed her whole career, and now she's into creating social media platforms. And so she offered her support.
How long have you been doing your podcast?
We've been doing the podcast now for about 9 years, but we went this mode a year ago, and we realized this is the way to go. Because the podcast, meaning just going through Blog Talk, which is fine, Blog Talk Radio, Google, you know, all of that, that's cool. But when we started visually doing, and we started this a year ago because of COVID, and it just, oh, my gosh, it just was amazing. And I think a part of it is just because you and I are similar in that way. I have a very connectional personality. So it's easy for people, even if they don't know me, to kind of connect.
How many followers do you have?
We now have, for the podcast, 114,000 followers worldwide. So we're seen in Paris, Dubai, other places as well, South Africa.
And what do you think your secret is for being successful?
I think just being authentic. Mm-hmm. I think I bring my authentic self. In between each of the interviews, I also have a show called a podcast. You know, I do one that's called Michelle Pope's Ponderings. And in that, I take issues from all over the world or PTSD. We've talked about a lot of things. And I've taken them on my health journey. So I started a sleeping project where I realized I wasn't getting enough sleep. And it was affecting my mental health. Right? And so they've been on that journey with me through the ponderings. And then we just started and launched on March 1st, Michelle Pope Productions, which is an online platform. And we're working with a couple of documentarists and different people. But, yeah, I came to this begrudgingly, but it was my daughter who is like, she's like, Mommy, you got to come out of from behind the mic because if you want to really help younger generations and other people, we don't listen to the radio. We do this. So
I'm getting StreamYard today. I looked at all the platforms, and we use StreamYard for the Facebook Live. And do you do YouTube?
We do YouTube also. Yep.
Yeah, yep. So StreamYard is a...
I'll tell Felicia about StreamYard. Yeah.
It's a pretty robust program. You can do all kinds of things with it. I mean, you might want to... And, you know, you don't need to look at it, but it's much more versatile than Zoom.
Yeah, I'll have to have her look at that. Yeah, and it's called... Spell it for me, Dr. Little.
StreamYard.
Oh, just StreamYard. Okay.
Yeah. And you can put background... You can do everything. You can put ribbons. You can put... Oh, you can do all kinds of things.
Okay.
There's 10 guests on the same project.
Okay.
Each one you can control from your own. And so that's kind of where we're going now because it works so well on blackdoctor.org.
Oh, I'll have to tell her about that because we're getting, you know, with the growing. But please, let's, you know, if we can collaborate, I'm more than willing.